Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peake, here with John Wells. Adults in the United States contract 2 to 4 colds per year. Children, even more. That's a total of over 1 billion colds. Our first guest this morning will talk with us about potentially good news on the cold front. Dr. Peter Barlow is the Associate Professor of Immunology and Infection and the Director of Research for the School of Applied Sciences at Edinburgh Napier University in Scotland. He conducts his own research and is the spokesperson for the British Society for Immunology. He joins us now from Scotland. Dr. Barlow, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Good morning.
Wonderful to have you here. So the spokesperson for the British Society for Immunology, what do you find yourself speaking on primarily?
I speak on quite a wide range of topics. Anything related to infectious diseases or vaccination or even treatments for the common cold.
Well, I would imagine that this news about a possible cure for the common cold, it hits the airwaves with a lot of interest, and we found ourselves quite interested in it. Talk a little bit, just by way of introduction, about what this possible cure is.
Sure. So the common cold is quite a ubiquitous term. So that means that it covers quite a wide range of different infections. So there's many different types of viruses that can actually cause the common cold. One of the most common viruses that causes around 50 to 70% of the common colds is called rhinovirus. And there's over 160 different types of rhinovirus that have been identified so far. That makes it incredibly challenging to create a vaccine that will cover all of those different types of rhinoviruses. And since there's currently no treatment for the common cold, developing a drug or a therapeutic that will be able to target all of those different types of viruses is quite a challenging prospect, but one that has a lot of potential to affect billions of people. So essentially a team in Imperial College London have taken a brand new approach to investigating ways of treating this infection. And what they're doing is they're looking at targeting proteins that are found in the cells of the person that's infected. So it's quite a novel approach. And I think it's a fantastic approach. I think it's a very clever approach because it means that this could potentially treat all of those 160 different types of rhinovirus.
And the rhinovirus is a moving target. There's many different copies, and each one can mutate, I understand. And I found it fascinating, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Barlow, but when we get the rhinovirus, let's say somebody sneezes and we take it inside our own body, you don't have the cold right away. It needs a host to be able to replicate itself. So what I believe you're talking about is turning a very key protein off that would allow the rhinovirus to be able to replicate itself to all of the cells. So the rhinovirus is this moving target that keeps mutating, and what you're doing on the front end is just turning off a protein that would allow it to replicate itself. Is it? I know it's very complex, but the gist of it, is it as simple as that?
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. So you can get infected with rhinovirus either by inhaling virus that's floating in the air, perhaps if someone's sneezed on you, or you can get it by touching a contaminated surface. And when the virus gets inside your respiratory tract, your upper airways, it binds to the cells there, and it gets inside the cells, and it uses the cell's own machinery to replicate. So it hijacks some of the proteins that are found in the cells and uses them to replicate and build new copies of the virus. So what this treatment aims to do is to essentially block those proteins that the virus is using to replicate. And these specific proteins are ones that form the virus shell or the virus capsid. So that means it could potentially be very effective at targeting all of those different types of rhinovirus which use the same human protein to replicate.
And I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but does this possibly open the door for looking at other diseases, maybe not even related to colds and flus, that are able to replicate because of certain proteins that could be potentially turned off?
Yes, it does. So viruses are very, very simple organisms, and the majority of them do use human proteins to replicate. So if we can find a way to block those proteins, which are universal or they're common to all of those different types of viruses, then that would be a fantastic way of treating other viruses. So if we identify proteins, for example, that cause that help influenza or Ebola or other viruses to replicate, then that might be a good therapeutic option or drug for treating those viruses.
So this is so interesting. You know, we've learned from just basic health, you know, you shouldn't treat the symptom, you treat the cause. This takes it one step further, you know, treat the host, this protein. And the protein, I won't even attempt to pronounce it. We'll just call it NMT. Well, how do you pronounce it anyway? It's a long word.
So I believe you pronounce it N-myrosetyltransferase.
Lynn, can you pronounce that with a Scottish accent?
I know.
I'm sorry.
I just wanted to hear your Scottish accent. That's it. But I'm wondering, obviously, we need proteins in our bodies, and they perform a variety of tasks and help us get along. You know, is it always the NMT protein that is the host for various disease, or are there other proteins? And if we turn that protein off, does it end up, you know, creating something else in our bodies that is actually a good reaction?
That's actually a really good point. So the first thing to say is that there's lots of different proteins in humans that are involved in viral replication. And actually, other groups have looked at blocking those proteins. So there's proteins called OSBP, or oxysterol binding protein, and PI4KB. And these are also involved in making new virus. So the blocking this new NMT1 and 2 protein is a really good strategy, but obviously there could be side effects. So I think in this study, the authors looked in human cells and they looked to see what happened when they did block the protein, and it looked like that there wasn't any serious side effects in the human cells. But obviously the next stage of this research would be looking to see what happens when you perhaps block the protein in animal models, and then even take the drug into human trials. And using very limited number of human patients, you would see what would happen when you block that protein. You would see if there was any side effects or problems that you would have to deal with.
So we're looking at this whole process taking maybe another 2 years or so. I think I read that if indeed this proves effective, we may see it on the market in a couple of years. I'm curious about that process and the promise for bringing this to market, for lack of a better word.
Sure. So any drug or medicine that is brought to market undergoes extensive testing, years of testing, to make sure that it is absolutely safe and that there are no side effects that might arise. when it eventually is made available. So while this drug or this blocker might work in the lab, there's a very good chance that it will also work in humans. So there will be extensive testing done over the next several years, both again in the lab, in animal models, and in humans, to make sure that there are no side effects that might occur. And you have to remember that when you're designing a drug that treats common cold virus, the high priority patients that you want to treat are the ones that have existing lung diseases like asthma or cystic fibrosis, where catching a cold can be a very serious infection, whereas in healthy people, catching a cold tends to be rather innocuous. It means you don't go into work for a few days and you get to spend some time in your bed. But you would want to test the safety of this drug in healthy people, but also in people that have existing lung conditions.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Dr. Peter Barlow. He's the Associate Professor of Immunology and Infection and the Director of Research for the School of Applied Sciences at Edinburgh Napier University in Scotland. We're talking with Dr. Barlow about a possible breakthrough in the cure for the common cold. Well, this is just huge, this whole thing. And I was taking a look at some of the data on what this could mean for everybody. So the Integrated Benefits Institute, and this is an institute in the United States that represents Caterpillar, Chevron, Google, Microsoft, Wells Fargo, and a number of municipalities, unions, and universities, they said that poor health, and we're talking about the big umbrella of poor health, cost the U.S. economy $576 billion a year, and 39%, and this is a new word for me, or $227 billion, is from lost productivity from what they call presenteeism, and that is when an employee reports to work, but the illness keeps them from performing at their best, and I just thought that was fascinating. So from absenteeism due to illness to the cost of people being at work but not being very productive and infecting everyone else is like $500 billion a year. So it's just fascinating. And things get complicated because most colds resolve themselves on their own without complications, but they're the leading cause of visits to the doctor and of time lost from work and school. And, you know, it's just fascinating how big this could be. I would add one final number, and that is when you buy, like, cold medication, you know, the thing to treat the symptoms, that's like $5 billion a year, so I'm sure they'll be lobbying to keep this thing going. What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I had a cold last week, coincidentally. I went to see the pharmacist and bought myself some headache medicine and some decongestant. So I, for one, would certainly welcome any type of drug treatment that would remove the need for me to take painkillers or decongestant to treat the symptoms of an infection and wait for my body to clear it naturally.
Yeah. And this whole complication of people thinking that they have the flu, but they really have the cold, that sort of factors into this. And specifically, Dr. Barlow, can you tell us, I believe what's been tested so far is an in vitro with human cells in petri dishes. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So the team test grew the virus in the lab and used human cells that were grown in the lab and tested the effects of the drug in those cells and virus.
Mm. Talk a little bit. I mean, if you go to your website, barlowlab.com, you find a whole host of things that you are working on. You're particularly, obviously, interested in immunology and infectious disease. You recently put out a warning about the ineffectiveness of antibiotics and the resistance. We often hear antibiotics, or we may have strains of bacteria that antibiotics can't treat. They're resistant to antibiotics. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so antibiotic resistance is one of the biggest threats facing humankind over the next few years. And if you think about infections that become resistant to antibiotics, or infections like rhinovirus where we don't have any effective antiviral treatments, then there needs to be a real focus over the next few years for governments, for charitable organizations, for scientists to focus on developing new treatments that can kill antibiotic-resistant organisms and can kill viruses that we don't have treatments for at the moment. So I think it's a real global health priority, and I would welcome any increased activity in this area, because I think this is a really huge health challenge for the human race going forward.
Mm, that's fascinating. I wanted to ask you also, some time ago you mentioned the NMT 1 and 2 protein are the host, obviously, for the rhinovirus, but you mentioned things like Ebola, and then I know you do work on other types of disease like Crohn's disease, inflammatory bowel disease. Are those also tied to the NMT, you know, that same protein?
I think NMT's got quite a wide variety of activities. It's an enzyme that works on a wide variety of different proteins. So I think NMT could actually be quite an effective target for a range of diseases. And I think the more that is learned about this enzyme, NMT 1 and 2, the more that it can be applied to other diseases. And I think it's a really interesting area to work in.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Barlow, you are a curious person, and you've got a lot going on with all the research that you do. What one question would you like to have answered that has not been answered yet?
What one question? That's a very difficult question. I think the investigators have done a fantastic job. I think there's a real promise in this treatment. What I'm curious about is what happens when you translate that treatment into humans. So I will be watching the work of this group very closely and hoping that when human trials do start, that the NMT proteins will be applicable for a really wide range of diseases. I'm really excited to see where this goes.
Yeah, last week on Cool Science Radio, we had a geneticist who was telling us about all of the new advancements in CRISPR technology and exploring the human genome. And I asked him, because you and I had sort of a nice trail of emails going back and forth getting ready for this, and So I was curious. I asked him, I said, do you get involved in proteins? And he said, no, man, I don't. He said, proteins is a whole other school. And so is this something that shows promise? Are we doing a lot of research on proteins? Is this the new, the new area for us?
I think what's exciting about this, I mean, research into proteins and the building blocks of proteins like peptides and amino acids has been going on for decades. Where we are now is that we can use technology, really advanced technology, to look and see what proteins do, what sort of diseases that they're involved in, and we can then use that information to identify drugs that might block or enhance the activity of those proteins. And we can do that on such a large scale, looking at drugs that we never thought could be used for treating different types of diseases before. So looking at huge panels of drugs to see what they do to lots of different proteins. So I think over the next 10 years, we will hopefully see lots of novel drugs for treating diseases that have never been able to be treated effectively before.
Mm. Dr. Barlow, before we let you go, I must ask you about the impact of particulates. You do a lot of research in this area, and I don't know how familiar you are with our area in Utah. I know you've spent some time in Atlanta, but the Salt Lake Valley is one of those valleys that, you know, mountains on both sides, traps in the air with inversion, especially in the wintertime. There's a high PM 2.5 count. You know, it's bad air in the wintertime. And how does that, in your research, how does that affect our immunology, our immune system?
Yeah, so we've done a lot of work characterizing and looking at human proteins that are very effective at killing viruses like influenza and rhinovirus, and we found almost by accident that the particles that are found in air pollution, you mentioned PM 2.5, they're the really nano-sized particles that are found in air pollution, are very good at damaging the proteins in the human body. They're very good at inhibiting or stopping them working properly. So I think there's a lot of work to do around reducing air pollution because it's becoming clear that exposure to air pollution can have significant effects on your ability to fight off bacteria and viruses. So I think it's really critical that effective ways of reducing air pollution can only help people's health.
Yes. Wow. Fascinating work that you do. And if anyone's interested, is the best place to find your research at your website, barlowlab.com?
Yeah, that's my own personal website. And they can also visit my institutional website at Edinburgh Napier University.
Excellent. Our guest is Dr. Peter Barlow, the Associate Professor of Immunology and Infection and the Director of Research for the School of Applied Sciences at Edinburgh Napier University in Scotland. We're so glad that you could join us today, Dr. Barlow. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
All right. Take care.
And when we return, we're going to have a conversation with Admiral James Stavridis, who has written Sea Power, the History and Geopolitics of the World's Oceans. Stay with us.